listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Wayne's going to be out this week, but he'll be back next week, next time. And now we have special guest with us. Dr. Susan Giddings is back with us again today. We have an exciting show for you. As always, we're going to talk about some of the more recent developments and recent conceptualization of unlocking federal time credits under the First Step Act. But first, let's start with, again, for those of you interested, this awesome book called Unlocking Federal Time Credits is available on Amazon. This book is under $16. It can also be shipped to your loved ones in federal prison direct from Amazon. So they can have this book too. We've had marvelous results where inmates have shared this with other inmates and their case managers, and they're spreading the correct gospel of what's going on with federal time credits. Now, that said, I'm pleased to announce where we are in the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, y'all. Not everybody gets into this magazine, but wait, who's in it? That's right, y'all's truly, we are in that. And we're also featured in some email blasts. Why is that? Because they recognize the extreme value of this, and there's just not a lot of people that know about these sentencing credits. And so, without further ado, Dr. Giddings.
Hey, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing well. Fixed my lighting problem from the last time I was on.
You did.
I'm very excited, not sitting in the dark.
Yes. I'm the one with the lighting problem, it looks like, today. Let's see. There we go. At least my armpit looks good. Anyway, so Dr. Giddings, if you would, kind of give an overall description of what the First Step Act and what the time credits are before, I know we have a very technical discussion headed here in a little bit, but kind of explain to our viewers a little bit about FSA and what that means.
Sure. So the First Step Act was passed December 21st of 2018. And it did a whole bunch of things. It made the Fair Sentencing Act retroactive. It changed how good conduct time was calculated for individuals. That's their statutory good conduct time for individuals in custody. That was huge. That resulted in about 3,000 individuals getting an immediate release in July of 2019. It also created, and this is where we move into the First Step time credits, it created a requirement for the Bureau of Prisons to, in conjunction with NIJ partners and Department of Justice, to create a risk and need assessment system. And this system actually has multiple moving parts. There were multiple requirements within the statute itself of elements that needed to be included. And then it established that for individuals who had lower minimum risk, or actually for all offenders who were eligible under the law, because the law also spelled out statutory requirements in terms of who can earn credit and who can't. For those who can't earn credit, there are other benefits within the prison that they can avail themselves of. But for the folks that are earning time credits, based on their risk level, based on their participation, their successful participation in programming, they are able to earn these time credits. And these time credits are applied to their satisfaction date and allow them to release from prison up to 12 months early. That's huge. As I like to say, it's the gold medal of the First Step Act for individuals in custody. They get to go home earlier. But in addition to the credit toward early release, it also adds in another component to allow credits toward halfway house time, toward home confinement, halfway house, what in the law is described as pre-release placement. So that's kind of in a nutshell. I mean, there's some other stuff. There's several other things in there, but that's the meat and potatoes.
So explain the mechanics. So the inmates that are in earning status and they're participating, they've done their surveys and they're either in a program or they're on the waiting list for a program. So they earn 10 days a month for the first 6 months, right?
So they earn 10 days a month for their assessments. If they are high risk or medium risk, they continue to earn those 10 days until they move into the low risk and the minimum risk level. So their risk level changes through program participation. They're earning credits. They just can't quite use them yet. I like to describe it as the credits are there, but the lights are off and you can't see them, right? Kind of like I was last month, the lights were off. So once they go to minimum and low risk, after they've had two consecutive FSA assessments at that lower minimum risk level, then the doors open and those credits get applied to their release date, toward halfway house, toward home confinement, et cetera. So for the person that's walking in the door, that's minimum or low risk from day one, they will go through two FSA assessments. Those FSA assessments are actually calculated by the computer independently and use the same timeline as their program reviews. So the first assessment, 28 days. The second assessment is 90 days or 180 days based on how much time they have to serve. So for individuals who are short, under 12 months to serve, left to serve when they walk in the door, they're going to see that 15 days, assuming everything continues to go well, they're going to see that 15 days at 118 days, 90 plus 28. Kind of an odd number, but that's the way it works out. For folks with a longer sentence, they're going to see it after 208 days. So it's the 28 days and then the 180 days. And so on that 208th day, did I do the math right?
Think so.
180 plus 20. Yes. Just checking. Case managers, we don't math. We use calculators. But on that 208th day, they start earning the 15 days per 30 days of programming. If good conduct was addition, this is calculus.
I just caught up with it. I was going to say 208 is better. But yeah, right. Exactly. And that's good to know. We get asked that question a lot. You know, we have a lot of clients. We do have a lot of clients that walk in the door that are eligible with the 20-month sentence, whatever, 20, 21, 27, 30-month sentence, and that they're first offenders, they're going to a camp, or some of the folks, God forbid, going to a low, but they walk in eligible, and everybody wants to know exactly, okay, when, you know. And so that's why it's like to say, and I know you probably hate that, but like 10 days a month for the first 6 months, 15 days thereafter until it caps out at a year, which is what, 2 years and 1 month or 2 years and 2 months?
It takes 27 months to earn 365 days, presuming you start earning and applying from day one.
Immediately, yeah.
Immediately, you have no interruptions, no negative stuff happening. You're doing everything you're supposed to be doing and you're earning credit. Now, oddly enough, that will actually be not 365 days, but 370 days, because that's how the math works. But you've got to have 27 months earning to get that year. But that means you've got to have, when you walk in the door, you have to have at least 39 months. Because what's happening is, if you think about a timeline from beginning to end, I'm going to like kind of be in the camera here, sort of, and from beginning to end, as the programming days are moving in from left to right, the release date is moving in from right to left, and they're moving toward each other. So you can't earn the full 365 days unless you have those 12 months left to fall off. So it takes 39 months when you walk in the door, and that's not a 39-month sentence. That's 39 months left after jail credit and good conduct time.
I was going to say, this is on top of good conduct time.
This is on top of good conduct time. So this is where the math gets really complicated.
15% discount off the top, right off the gut, man. First day smoking.
Yep. This is why the computer does the calculating and not people. Because let me tell you, it's really easy to screw up. So in order to have 39, we're not even going to talk about jail credit. But in order to have 39 months left to serve on day one, you have to have about a 42-month sentence to account for the good conduct time that you're going to earn based on the sentence that comes off the top. So you got to have about 42 months, apply the good conduct time. That leaves you about 39 months left. And that means after 27 months, you'll get to go home on your release date. That's not talking, we're not even talking about halfway house yet.
Right. And I do want to get in there. Now, folks, I know this sounds like a convoluted bunch of stuff, but, you know, if you just sit there, and of course it's outlined in the book, but if you sit there and say, okay, look, 10 days a month, 6 months, okay, 15 days a month, it caps at a year, takes about 2 years and 3 months to get the full year benefit off this stuff. Now, here's what I'm going to do is complicate this further, folks. I get to be the bad guy today. Susan kind of explained to us, like, sometimes when the offender has a shorter sentence, remember in their halfway house placements, just based on their FSA, not a second chance. Remember that?
It's the reverse. It's
actually, right.
Oh, you said it the reverse. For folks who, that their net time, walk in the door, good conduct time chops off, jail credit chops off, and they've got less than 39 months left, they're not going to hit 365 days. The way the law is written, the Congress gave the Bureau the authority to apply it toward early release or halfway house or pre-release placement, which includes halfway house or home confinement. But because the Bureau needs a release date in order to plan for halfway house date, they made the administrative decision that those first 365 days, if the person was eligible to apply it toward early release, because there is another caveat, if you don't have supervised release, you can't get it off early anyway. But they made the decision that the first 365 days were going to go toward early release. So if you don't hit 365 days, that means your halfway house placement that you would routinely be reviewed for, halfway house and or home confinement, is strictly based on the Second Chance Act. If it's based on the Second Chance Act, then the person is subject to the limitations of the Second Chance Act.
And talk about the five-factor review and all that.
Yeah. Sure. So when the Second Chance Act passed, the Second Chance Act required the Bureau to use the same designation factors that are used for institution designations. So things like the individual person in terms of their background, their individual security and programming needs, the resources available in the community, those kind of things. So it's where before the Second Chance Act, folks who were in the penitentiary and had worked their way down to maybe a low or a medium, but they'd been down a long time, they still might only get 4, 5, 6 months. The Second Chance Act expanded that halfway house placement up to 12 months. That the Bureau could place individuals in halfway house. They still limited home confinement to 10% of the sentence or 180 days. 10% of the term of incarceration or 180 days, whichever is less. But prior to the Second Chance Act, folks in penitentiaries, folks with some violence in their background, if they got any halfway house, it was a dice roll. But Congress, in their infinite wisdom, said, you know what? We can't have people in a penitentiary and then just dump them out with a bus ticket and $50 in gratuity. We need some transitional placement. So that kind of changed the model. And so you started seeing individuals. And the biggest impact was for the individuals in the high security facilities and the medium security facilities. They were not getting placements before that. Now they are.
Right.
So then that's in place for a number of years. And then the First Step comes along. And one of the challenges with the First Step Act is the First Step Act, while it reauthorized the Second Chance Act, it didn't address some of those places where they don't necessarily play well together. And with the First Step Act, allowing someone to to receive a large amount of credit toward Halfway House after that first 365 days, then you get all kinds of questions like that 12 months of the Second Chance Act. Do you add it on to the conditional placement? Because that conditional placement is based on earned and unearned credit, right? Or do you add it on to the release date, which has that 1 year of credit apply? Where does home confinement fit in? Do you apply it based on the unearned credit, or are you limited to the Second Chance Act?
Yeah.
For the guys that don't have any FSA credit going to Halfway House, so the folks that are under that 39 months, they're easy, right? Halfway House is applied based on that FSA release date. The 10% home confinement is based on that release date. Well, now, and I know there's a lot of grumbling, a lot of questions and things out there in the wide world of the internet about Halfway House placement, but there's legal issues that have to be sorted out.
Right.
Where does the home confinement get put?
Right. We've had stuff in the Mid-Atlantic, you know, not to call Baltimore area out or whatever, but man, you know, some of the bed space out in that part of the country, it's tough. As big as Houston is right now, Houston's a huge halfway house. For some reason, they're kind of low key full for the last couple of months. It's been kind of a sweat. However, where I'm here in Dallas, and Susan, you and I just witnessed a miracle, right, on these two guys that went in together, and they got what? The case manager gave them a year halfway house,
and got for a year halfway house, and they got the full year. I really thought they missed the family misunderstood.
I thought the family misunderstood. Smoke. Yeah. And they were telling me, of course, we verified it and they got the full placement. So, you know, it is interesting. And that's a frustrating thing for y'all folks is that it's not the same. So whatever, you know, Halfway House and companies are hold the RRC contracts in one area. So, you know, Lydell is one, and this one was Volunteers of America, but Dismas might have another one. Salvation Army might have another one, right? And those are different private sector companies that have their own staffing and needs and stuff like that. And so then when we talk about home confinement, I'll kind of drop a home confinement bomb here, but hey, you know, usually those community contracts call for about 20% of your count to be on home confinement. Well, if you don't have the staff to monitor them or whatever, then you're just going to leave it at that minimum of 20% because it's you still have to monitor people when they're at home. I mean, that phone's going off at 3 a.m. They're still doing job checks. The person still goes to the RRC once a week, right, to check in. So anyhow, that's why it's so frustrating, but we've been here to help our clients navigate the waters. And,
sure. And the thing with Halfway House is those Halfway House contracts are typically 5-year contracts.
10-year contracts.
10-year contracts. Some of them are longer. I know some of the, I think in more recent days, and I'm stepping out of my area of expertise, I think they kind of were, because of the changes that have been happening, you know, in the old days, it was pretty close, pretty much. If you had 100 beds, physical beds, you had to maintain at least that 20 on home confinement. And you had to have the staffing to accommodate that. And the contracts do have buffer to go over that, but there is contractual capacity. And as new contracts are generated, I just saw just recently earlier this year, saw a Halfway House, you know, announcing that they had received this new federal contract and they were going to have, and how many beds and the percentage of home confinement has gone up. They had to be able to maintain, it was actually closer to about 50, I think it was about 50% of their capacity. Wow. Yeah, it was
more of a work release, wasn't it? Wasn't this one more of a work release program than a halfway?
They had a high work release component. That might have been the reason, because I was actually surprised that the home confinement percentage was so high.
Right.
But, you know, the way the contracts work is we have to tell the provider what our minimum expectation, or I should say, I'm retired, what the Bureau's minimum expectation is for them to do. And while there's some buffer play in that, in both directions. You know, people may not realize this, but if a halfway house is underutilized, the provider is still paid a guaranteed amount. Right. So it's important that, you know, the Bureau monitors those bed space and make sure that they're maintaining that threshold, because if they don't, they're paying for beds that they're not, that are empty. So that kind of buffer moves in both directions.
So let's talk a little bit about, okay, so now the person's earned time credits, got their good conduct time shaved off first thing, then they got their FSA time. If there's enough time permitting, they earn up a year, then they get some halfway house. Now, people always ask, if your sentence is shorter, can you still earn FSA credits while you're in the halfway house? And the answer is yes.
Yes, because what's happening is with the conditional release date calculator, which rolled out last year, what's happening is the computer is saying, okay, presuming nothing changes, those dates are, again, programming days are accumulating, you know, from the left side moving in, and the release date, the days coming off the release from the right side coming in. So what happens then is the computer has calculated and hit, this is where we expect the person to lie now or end up, right? So the problem is, and it's a math problem, is the computer only knows what it knows, right? It doesn't know if a person is going to drop from medium or low. Computer doesn't know if the person's going to continue to be doing the same thing every day and not getting in trouble. The computer also doesn't know what day each month the calculator is going to be run, because that button pushing each month is a manual button pushing, because the agency, the Bureau, targets that last weekend of the month, and they run it over the weekend so it runs faster, because over the weekend, a lot of staff are, you know, a lot of Bureau staff, you know, the non-correctional officers, a lot of those non-custody folks, they're not working on the weekend, which means they're not using their computers on the weekend, which means there's less processing going on. So they can run this application on the weekend and it runs through the population faster. If they have to do a midweek run, which they did in September, they did an additional rollout in September. Instead of being able to be done in under 24 hours, it ends up taking an extra day or so. So if dates are rolling out over, say, 3 days instead of just 2 days.
And while the date might be on the case manager, whatever can see it, it takes an extra day for the locator center to pick it up. Right?
Absolutely, because there is a lag between when it's run and live inside the agency and when it populates out on the public website. So there's also another lag there.
Right.
So it's not run the same day each month. It's, you know, when does the last weekend, when's last day of the weekend fall? And maybe if Saturday's on the 31st, well, then it's running on the 31st and the 1st. Or maybe it's run, maybe that last weekend run starts on the 27th, 28th. So it's running on different days, but the calculator is assuming exact 30-day increments.
Right. Now, explain to our listeners. I know. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
No, you're doing a great job. Explain to our listeners that depending on the person's cycle and when the calculator runs, they might get some days, but not others, whatever.
Sure. So when I was still working and you know, I qualified for retirement, and all of the folks I was talking to, you know this. Federal retirement, you only get credit for complete months. So you have 30 years, 2 months, and 2 weeks, you lose the 2 weeks, right? If you only get credit for those complete months. Time credits works the same way. The programming days aren't prorated. There's no partial posting of credit. You only get 10 days, or you get those 15 days posted, and the programming days have to be complete. So, remember we said about the first intervals at 28 days?
Yes.
That's 28 days. That's not 30 days, which means in that first 28 days, nothing's happening. So if you come in on the first of the month, we'll use nice even numbers, and let's say the calculator runs on the 27th, you have 27 days. but you don't have 30. So no credits posted. You have 27 leftover days that go into the next month. And then next month, well, we go a full month. And from the 27th of this month to the 30th of next month is 33 days. And you have 27 and 33. That works out to 60. Mind you, I did that example exactly, so it would work out. You have 60 days, so you get 2 months of credit posted.
All right, so they'll post the 2 months.
But that same example, if it was run on the 29th and you had 59 days, you get 1 month of credit posted and 29 days are left over for the other month. Now, over the course of time, that number of leftover days does get picked up. It does even out for the most part. As an example, in September, the calculator, or actually, I'll go back and further. The calculator was run the last weekend of July, and then August 7th and 8th, or 8th and 9th, I don't remember, they ran it again. They were pushing out some additional stuff. So folks who didn't get credit on the 27th got credit on August 8th because, well, they had another week and a half of programming.
Process.
They didn't have 30 days. They had leftover days. Maybe they had 27, 26, 28 leftover days. So they ended up getting so then on the 8th, when it posted, they got credit.
Will this new computation sheet show how many carryover days they are as it rolls?
It doesn't show. Well, what it does right now is when an individual is looking at their worksheet, there are bands or blocks through the report. And every time there's a change, a status change, there's a new block. So when that individual is in that 10-day earning rate, they're going to have a block and it's going to take them for that 208 days, right? But 208 days does not divide out evenly in 30-day increments. What happens is the individual gets 180 of those days are credited toward time credits at the 10-day rate. And then 28 days get carried over to the next block. So when they look at their worksheet, what they're going to see is in block number one, the carryover days are zero because they just started. So there's no carryover. Carryovers are from the previous period. Now, when you go into the new period, you go into that second block because now you're earning 15 days, right? You're going to see a 28-day carryover. That adds in. So now we start calculating your programming days again. And whatever the number of programming days, we have to add in that 28 days to get the total for the period, which is what is calculating the federal time credit. Okay. If you went out to the hospital for 3 days, 4 days, you had an emergency appendectomy happens, right? You go out. You have some days of your admission status is such that you're not in the institution.
Uh-oh.
That's going to create a block of disallowance. And then when you're back, you're going to get another block. Your credit, anything that was carried over, of course, if you're only out for 4 days, your first day and your first day, the last day you left the institution, the first day you're back, count toward it. It's only the days in the middle. It's just going to show those disallowances. It's going to show the carry. It's going to show your disallowance, and then you're going to go back into earning status.
Same thing if you're in disciplinary seg.
Same thing with disciplinary segregation. Same thing if you go out on writ. If you're in transit, you're not in a qualifying admission status.
Oh, there's an inmate rumor about there's some law or something that's going to allow people that are in transit or on holdover in Oklahoma, whatever, in transit. Their FSA credits. That's not going to happen, right? Because the way the law is written.
I mean, they would have to amend the FSA. I mean, if they were going to, as an example, there is, it's not gone anywhere, but it is introduced. There is a Senate bill because the way the FSA is written, old law individuals, so folks sentenced before November 1st, 1987. 87. They are not eligible for the First Step Act credits. And Congress feels, you got some Congress folks looking at it and saying, well, we meant time credits. We didn't mean compassionate release. But where they put it in the bill any of those things. So for folks who are familiar with compassionate release, there's a very lengthy process, and Congress put into the First Step Act that if there's a delay of 30 days or more on the part of the Bureau at any point in the process, that gives the individual kind of the off-ramp to go directly to the court. Okay. Except they put this sentence in here that says, if you were sentenced before November 1, 87, you're not eligible for, this doesn't apply to you, the entire bill. So back here a few years back, and it was actually, it's cleared committee, Senator Durbin introduced a Senate bill that one of the things, and it was the Safer Detention Act, and one of the things it would do was saying, oh, wait, we made a mistake. We meant old law inmates were okay for the compassionate release. We didn't mean to lump them in there. We just meant this over here. So, and Congress does that, Sajan. They write one thing and they go, oh, wait, we meant something else, but they've got to change the language.
They have to change the language, and we'll see if the amount of holdovers create this crushing blow, which I doubt.
And you know, there's almost every day we're hearing rumors about this change or that change. And, you know, when I was a case manager, when I was a case management coordinator, and I'd be out and I'd be standing main line and I'd have someone come up to me and say, hey, Miss Giddings, have you heard? And there's always rumors flowing, and there's always bills being introduced that never go anywhere.
Correct.
Flashback to our childhood days, and I'm just a bill, things die in committee all of the time. And or they make it out of committee, but they don't make it to the floor. So I used to tell folks, until you see the president signing it in the Rose Garden, it hasn't happened.
And even when the president does sign it in the Rose Garden, and here we were in 2018 with the passage of the First Step Act, here we are 6 years later. And this is only how far we are in terms of being able to fully implement what was said back then.
Absolutely. And, you know,
ooh, got a celebration there. Somebody loved that.
and here's the crazy part. And we talk about it in the book. For those of you who have never had the pleasure of working in D.C., either for any reason, D.C. is unique. And everything is political. And as you're aware, it was enacted in 2018 under one administration, and it was implemented under another administration. Okay. And those administrations, both at the presidential level and directly impacting the Bureau of Prisons at the Department of Justice level, had very different ideas about how that law should be implemented.
Yep.
Even now, without any statutory legislation changes, interpretation is happening all the time. And, you know, the Department of Justice has lawyers for lawyers, and they're always looking at things. And you know, we talk about in the book, you know, where you are, where you're serving time has an impact, because, you know, if you feel that the Bureau is doing something wrong or has calculated your credit wrong, and you go through the process and go out and file a habeas to get the court to review it, and the Bureau responds, which court you're in drastically impacts the outcome. And what district, and, you know, whether it's the magistrate, the district, the circuit, whether or not it's going to be appealed, and whether the, you know, is there an appeal? Is there not going to be an appeal? All of that is political. And it's frustrating. I mean, it was frustrating for me as a staff member. I can't imagine how frustrating it is for the incarcerated population and their loved ones. But it is a reality of DC, and we have an election coming up. And depending on what happens, and I don't just mean what happens at the White House level.
Right.
What happens is the Senate. Is the Senate going to flip? Is the House going to flip? Is the majority going to get bigger in the House? Is it going to get smaller? Right. All of those things.
Funding. Yes. Will the director change? Will the director of the agency change with the administration? Should that occur? Huge. Okay. So folks, right? Just because the law says what, I mean, so again, there's a lot of things that are nuanced here that a lot of people just don't take into account. Once again, that's why We're here to help bridge that gap. Now, that said, what do we have here? I've got a few minutes. I guess I've got a home confinement question, then I want you to go over some of the new changes that you can talk about, Susan. I know you can't talk about all the proposed changes, but I think there's going to be some changes with the worksheets and then inmate availability.
And there were some changes last month that were beneficial, beneficial to the population.
So to be clear, as the person is earning their first step back credit, their federal time credits, right? Time's coming off their sentence. So is their home confinement eligibility date. Now, the way things are right now, sometimes that's not acknowledged or talked about or computed or whatever. Or
it is, but it's not necessarily understandable. So here's what happens with home confinement.
All right.
Home confinement is a block of time, and it is based on the statutory sentence. So you get a release date, and this is because of the Second Chance Act. The Second Chance Act says you can go into the community for halfway house up to 12 months with 10% or 180 days, whichever is less, to home confinement. So you get this fixed block of time based on your statutory term. And in the book, we talk about the difference between your statutory release date and your satisfaction date. The satisfaction date is where the time credits are, right? So you have this block of time. And if this is my block of time,
there it goes.
My phone. This is the block of time. You get that timeline. All it's doing is moving. The block of time stays the same. As the release date changes, the satisfaction date changes, that date is moving as well. So the home confinement is set. It's locked. It's a number of days.
So are you at liberty to say that with some of the new changes coming up in terms of the computation aspect and worksheets and computation data sheets, that when the person gets, okay, here's your FSA conditional date, here's also now your new conditional-ish home confinement eligibility date?
Not yet.
And not yet.
Is the home confinement, remember I said Second Chance Act and FSA don't necessarily play well together. Right now we know that the FSA date is changing, the FSA release date is changing, the home confinement date is moving because the release date is moving. The FSA date doesn't move with the conditional date because the conditional date includes earned and unearned credit.
Right.
It may not happen. You know, somebody could have a conditional release date that is 6 months earlier than their current release date, and they make some bad decisions, something happens, they end up in special housing, they end up with discipline time.
You know, and then
getting transferred to a more secure facility. Now their pattern stuff changes, now their program, their admission status changes.
You're right.
And plus it would add to the happen.
It would add to the confusion because then you'd have this an FSA conditional date, but then you'd have this home confinement conditional target date that wouldn't be a legitimate date.
Not legitimate, it may not be legal for the Bureau to apply the 10% date to the conditional date, the unearned credit.
Right. No, you're right. Right.
And that's one of those things that, you know, let's add to it this idea of this conditional placement date that's been talked about, has been batted around the last few days. So now we have a conditional placement date, which puts the individual in the community much, much earlier. And then we talk about possibly Second Chance Act time. Now, I will say, if an individual remember we talked about the Second Chance Act and the five-factor review, and one of those issues is resources. Does the person have a home? Do they have a job? Do they have skills to get a job? Are there skills? Is their education level a high school diploma? Do they have some college level? Those are all individual personal resources. If an individual has earned 700 days of halfway house time, that's part of their personal resources. They've got that's something in their pocket. They've earned these days. So that they're at an advantage over someone who hasn't earned days toward halfway house, or maybe has only earned 20 or 30 days, or I'm sorry, it would be 30 or 45 days toward because at that point they would have had, they're in the 15-day earning rate, and only has maybe 45 days toward halfway house because they got 365 plus 45. Right. They've got a smaller resource. So if a person were to get Second Chance Act time on top of a large FSA conditional date, this is days based on unearned credit, we're just presuming everything is going to continue as is, where does the 10% date go? Does it go again? Is it looked at in terms of unearned credit? I mean, it sounds like an academic discussion, but we know the law says, the FSA law says, that credit, earned credit cannot be applied until the amount of credit earned equals the remaining amount of time to serve. So if we calculate, again, that timeline's moving to the middle, if we figure out what that date is, that's the earliest date you can go out of the prison to halfway house or home confinement.
Right.
Where do we put Second Chance Act?
Exactly. Now, we have less than 10 minutes.
Oh.
The myth of front loading. Front loading. Nothing's front loaded. These are just calculations that are brought before.
These are just, and I don't know how else to emphasize it. And we see the question once a week, I swear. They are not front loaded. It is being calculated to figure out where should it land? What should that date land if everything stays the same for the next X number of months or years? It's for planning purposes. It's to give everybody some information, not just the individual in custody who's looking at when might I go home, but the case manager who's got to do paperwork, the residential reentry management branch who's got a plan for bed space.
Right.
Like, it's about giving everybody, all the players involved, information.
Information, again,
and that's all it is. It is not
it's
real.
Projected. It's not earned. Still have to earn.
Until it's earned, it's not real.
Right. Just because you qualify for a million months halfway else doesn't mean you get it. Just because, you know,
until you actually get to that point and you've banked those and you've earned up those credits, you haven't. And so it's all.
So that's why these calculators can be confusing, because obviously they're not. We've told you how the calculation works. These calculators aren't doing that. And so anyway, okay.
Do you want to share one bit of news that something rolled out last month? We're in September, August, actually the end of July, beginning of August. So, you know, we talk about those self-assessment surveys, and individuals walk in the door, they got to get access to TruLinks, they've got to then log in and get their stuff done. So initially, and I should say like from the beginning until last month, the individual was in, didn't get to start earning credit. If we think about the earning status as the faucet being turned on and water flowing, the water didn't get turned on until they completed those four assessments.
But now,
as long as they complete those four assessments within those first 28 days, they're going to get credit back to day one.
Awesome.
Now, this is excellent for the incarcerated population. You know, you're walking into prison, you're trying to get settled in, you're trying to get yourself acclimated to this kind of new state of your life. And now you don't have to be like, oh my gosh, where's the computer? I got to get on and I got to get this. You actually have a moment to take a breath. From the Bureau side, having dealt with issues related to when did they complete the credit? When did the team hit the button to generate the team sheet? When does the upload and the downloads and all that stuff happen? It simplifies it for the Bureau as well, for the auto calculation tool, because as long as you've done in those first 28 days, you're getting credit from day one. So we don't have to worry about those kind of process errors where the case manager pulled your paperwork for team and you did the assessments yesterday, but between the upload and the download, there's a lag, right?
Right. Hey, we got four minutes. We got four minutes left. So what are some of the new changes?
Offenders will be able to see their conditional release date. Actually, that's already out there as of this month. It is on their team sheet or on their FSA worksheet. They can get those at team. They should not be bombarding their case managers. They will get those at team, just like they should be getting them at every team and should have been getting them for a while now. But that will be on the worksheet on the bottom in the planning section, and it'll say FSA conditional release date, and it'll be printed there for them to see. And then there's some other stuff they're working on, some of the halfway house portion of it. I think the rollout was a little premature on that. They're doing some work on the definitions and what each of those categories mean, that some folks who have worksheets have seen them. They're like, what is this? What does this mean? They're putting some together, reorganizing it a little bit so it makes a little bit more sense, putting out some definitions and things like that. So we'll be seeing that probably in the next several weeks. We'll be seeing more new stuff come out.
Good. Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, there's going to be
very busy.
Some exciting changes, you know, and I know a lot's happening real fast. I know that some tensions are getting high in some places. And I know some places that the inmates don't have regular access to case managers for whatever reasons, that it's frustrating. So that's why we're really trying to empower folks. So look, when you do go to team, you are entitled.
Ask the question, ask for it.
Things right. And so, again, that's been important. Well, we're not going to get into time. You know, we were going to probably, we'll have Susan come on the show again. We'll talk about our levels of services, our levels of different services that you and I do in our consulting sphere. And it's probably just a better way to do that anyway, with about 3.5 minutes. So with that, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Then I'll do our connection points, but I appreciate you coming on the show as always.
Thank you.
And we're going to continue this. There's a lot of information. As a matter of fact, folks, probably in late 24, early 2025, right, Dr. Giddings, the second edition of this is going to come out, because it's going to have some changes, but I think we want to wait to the election, right?
I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. Like I said, changes from at the White House, or changes at the and/or changes in the House and the Senate. I just kind of want to wait and see.
Yeah, and to say, yeah, I mean, this is very
let that play out, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, for folks. Yeah, I mean, we've been accused. Oh, it's not political. It is political. Make no mistake about it. It's the Bureau of Prisons. It's bureaucracy. And it's a politically driven organization, and that's that. But
I wish it wasn't. It would make life a whole lot easier.
It is. But it just is. I mean, every day we were reminded of that, right? And by God Almighty, you know, we were just victims of that, kind of, in a way. It's not necessarily a straight line, and it's difficult for.
I can't even begin to explain the crash course in politics that I got moving to D.C.
I know, and so for abstract-minded folks like us, we had to really make some adjustments. Anyhow, with that, thanks for coming on today. Folks, listen, you can see this show for free on Apple Podcasts. We're on Amazon Audible. We got picked up by iHeartMedia and others. So I'm so proud of the little podcast that could. So you can get this show for free. And you can catch me on ConcierceCoach.net. You can catch us on FederalPrisonAuthority.com. We have our Facebook group called First Step Act, Early Release from Federal Prison. It's a public group, very popular. 8,000 members strong this last week. I'm so proud. Wow. I opened that group in COVID, and look what's happened. It's a great community of inmate families, former inmates, judges, SIS lieutenants, everybody, whatever. No, just kidding. Everybody's on there, and it's a great community. So what else? So, yeah, we're on Facebook and that group, Concierge Coaches at Facebook, on ConcierceCoach.net. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week. Stay safe, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.